A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello, ladies. Hello, girlies.
Hello, hello, hello. I have the sad lamp on. I might pop it on for the duration. Oh, my God. I need it on relax mode. That's better.
How is the sad lamp going?
It's actually so essential to my mental health now. It's kind of astonishing. I'll, like, get up in the morning and sit on therapy mode, which is, like, the really crazy one because it's so dark outside for, like, 15 minutes. And then throughout the day, I'll be on relax.
Wow.
Just relax.
Relax mode. I know. That's the... Yeah, anyway, so boring to talk about London weather, but that is the sad thing, that it's just so dark all the time.
Dark and depraved. How is being back in the sunny sunshine? You were here for a good time, not a long time.
Yeah, it's nice being back in the sunshine, but as Grace just got word of off air, I'm like fucking just sad and depressed about everything that's going on in the world. And I think it feels just like, we did want to talk about this on the podcast for the past couple of weeks, but we didn't want to be two things. We didn't want to be super jarring and talk about something really intense and really sad and then go on to speak about like silly, trivial things. And then the other thing is that this is such an ongoing thing that all of these major news publications and huge like outlets are having to retract what they're saying, and you know, there's so much misinformation and so much kind of like, everyone is so heightened that it felt like any word we said could be kind of just like misconstrued or taken the wrong way. And I think because people have so many like personal ties to this, it felt like, you know, we're obviously not, after work drinks obviously isn't going to be like the main source of news for it, but at the same time it feels like kind of crazy to ignore what's going on. And
I think something that's hard is that we didn't talk about the terrorist attack in Israel when it happened. We both have very close people to us who are Jewish who really felt that there was this palpable, noticeable silence when that happened. And I know that really hurt a lot of people and continues to hurt for a lot of people. And I think the suffering and pain that people's friends and family and loved ones have experienced was horrendous and immense. And the trauma and fallout of that is something that is ongoing and will last for a long time. What we as a culture are grappling with right now is simultaneously holding all those things to be true and criticizing a government, a political body, and a military about their reaction to that very real human suffering. And I think that is where a lot of nuance and complexity comes into the way that we talk and think about this.
Obviously, I completely condemn what Hamas did. I think it's absolutely terrible. I feel immense sadness for every Israeli life lost, and all of my Jewish friends who are dealing with the trauma of that and who are genuinely, yeah, really scared and having like a really hard time right now. I think that just needs to live there, and that just is what it is. And I really hate right now this current climate of there just being no nuance and no kind of, I don't know, everything just feels so flattened. And I think that's obviously a social media thing, but it's frustrating. I think we can also live with the truth of that this response by Israel goes beyond self-defense. I don't think there's any way you can call dropping 6,000 bombs in 1 week the same amount that the US dropped on Afghanistan after 9/11 in a year. Like, in 1 year, that's how many bombs the US dropped on Afghanistan. And a place the size of Hackney, a place like a third of the size of Auckland, has had 6,000 bombs dropped on it in a week. You know, as of today, 12,000 tons of explosives have been dropped on Gaza. Out of 2.2 million Palestinians living there, 1.4 million are now displaced. They don't have homes to go back to. 6,500 people have been killed, 2,360 of them are children. A further 16,900 people are injured. There's no water, gas, or electricity. Hospitals now don't have any way to run.
And I think it's very easy to hear statistics like that and for them to just remain statistics. You hear them and you think, oh my God, that's horrible, that's unimaginable. And the actual real human suffering at the center of it can get lost. What Palestinians in Gaza are going through right now is unimaginable, is horrifying. And the Palestinian people have been suffering for a very long time. I don't think anyone would contest the fact that life in Gaza, for Palestinians living in Gaza, is awful, awful, and has been for a very, very long time. And I think that compounds the suffering they're going through right now. It is just trauma on trauma on trauma. And it's active and it's ongoing. And for people that have Palestinian family or friends or loved ones who are on the ground, or even who aren't on the ground and are Palestinian, the pain of that as something that is happening right now that we are watching happen in real time on our smartphones is just so huge that I think most of us don't even know how to fathom it. I think anyone who has logged on to Twitter or Instagram this week and seen the video footage on the ground in Gaza of what the Palestinians are experiencing will not forget those images and videos. And I think that needs to remain very much at the center of what we're discussing here. It's not just about numbers and statistics, it's real human lives.
Yeah, exactly right. It's terrifying and it's horrific and it's hard to look at, but it's really important that we don't look away right now. There are journalists on the ground risking their lives every single day to show us what is happening in real time. And they're doing it in English. They're not doing it in their first language. They're doing it in English because they know that we're the ones that can make a difference. And the really important thing that we need to focus on right now is calling for a ceasefire to stop more lives being lost. Every single day that goes by, it becomes so much more urgent because not only are these bombs being dropped, not only are these people being displaced and have nowhere to go, nowhere to sleep, but food is running out, electricity is completely running out in hospitals, so people won't be able to get... It's like people are going to die in ways that aren't from bombs themselves. The water is contaminated and people are now drinking seawater. These are real people. It's so sad. It's really hard to talk about without getting really upset. And also the other thing is like everyone who's sharing this, they're not doing it lightly, you know, like all of your friends who are really engaging in this issue, it's traumatizing. And people, as well as these journalists and celebrities like Kalani and everyone who's being really onto it is doing it because they want to make a change. And I think it's really important that we realize our collective power. And as, you know, we live in a democracy, like these people are elected by us. And if enough of us make noise, they have to make a difference. They have to make a change. Like they can't keep ignoring us. And I think that's why every single body at a march, you might wonder how to help, but it's why every single body, every single person at a march helps. It adds in numbers. Numbers scare politicians. Like every single petition you sign, donating really, really helps right now. Sharing resources and like, yeah, just the bottom line of calling for a ceasefire. And I think that as well, though, we need to keep in mind that that's the bare minimum. And I don't want there to be a ceasefire and for everyone to go back to their normal lives. And if, like, my God, sorry. I don't want there to be a ceasefire so that we can all go back to our normal lives and like have, you know, we can just be like, oh, great. Now we don't have to worry about this thing. And now the world doesn't feel so heavy and we can just carry on as usual. Because if there's a ceasefire, but nothing changes to the living conditions in Gaza, if nothing changes for the Palestinians living in the West Bank and for the Jewish, innocent Jewish people and caught up in the middle of this conflict as well, this is going to carry on and it's going to carry on quietly. And I think it's really important right now that we've had our eyes open to what is going on, even though it's so devastating the way it happened. And I think we need to really ensure that we don't go back to forgetting about these people, and we don't go back to being complacent and like letting this immense human suffering like happen. But yeah, but to kind of pick the mood back up, I guess the one thing that made me feel really happy on Saturday was going to the Taylor Swift Eras Tour concert. It was so funny. I was literally dancing in the Grove.
Feelings and emotions, literally the duality of man.
I know. I was like dancing in the Grove being like, God, like I just like need, my brain needs this 3 hours of like absolute numb girliness to be able to re-engage. And that's also important. People need to like, obviously, yeah, I haven't been opening Instagram and engaging in every single thing I see every single time I go on there at all. So sorry, Taylor Swift. she's incredible, Grace.
You loved
she
it.
Really is.
So I feel like we all saw a large amount of the Eras Tour through TikTok. This was back when I was still on TikTok and I felt like I saw the entire concert probably over the course of 2 weeks. And gave me a new perspective, obviously, on Taylor as a performer, newfound respect, et cetera, et cetera. But what was it like to watch it in full?
It was great. Yeah, so I think the concert itself is 3 hours long and they cut some of it for the movie. But it is literally a concert movie. Like, there's no BTS or anything like that. And she starts... Oh, my God, I've literally forgotten what era she starts in. But she...
Oh, is it chronological?
No, it's not chronological. She just goes through them in different eras. But I have never thought I liked the Reputation album. And there was quite a lot of bangers on there.
What are the songs on there? I remember Look What You Made Me Do. I wasn't a huge fan.
I don't
of that.
Like that song. Yeah. I think all the songs that aren't the singles are really good. If I bring up my Spotify, it's literally like the last album I listened to. Oh my God. It's like playing now. But I think it was also just cool because when you're at those concerts, generally, unless you're right at the front, you can't see the intricacies of like the stage. And I mean the stage stuff she was doing was so jarring. It was like Dua Lipa's Lobster times 10. Like at one point she was like a witch with a cape and like running around. We were like, I don't know if that's necessary.
Why do they do that? It's just something to do. It's like they've got to do something, or is there
I think so. I think it's just like it's such a pop star thing. Because also you think about how they all wear silver and sparkles and those little sparkly jumpsuits, like every single pop star, whether you're like Beyonce or Taylor Swift. And it's just to kind of give everyone something to look at.
Fill the
like
time.
Like the Queen when she wears colour.
Did it feel 3.5 hours?
No, it felt short. We got Taylor Swift popcorn and Taylor Swift Pepsi, but then I'd also had 2 margaritas before going in and then had 2 Aperol spritzes in there. So I was so lit and everyone was standing out of their seats dancing and everyone had friendship bracelets and were handing them out.
Oh my God.
I hate it, but I love it.
What were your favorite tunes, or is it more of a favorite eras situation?
I can't even remember, but she has so many bangers. I was like, I can't believe I know like every single song. I love her I love her latest album, Midnights. So I liked hearing that. I also loved Folklore. I was a 1989 girly when that came out.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't a Taylor Swift girly, but was a 1989 girly. So was pleasantly surprised by Folklore. I think Evermore sucks. Mm-hmm. And Lover I don't like. But yeah, it's really fun. It's so funny how, I mean, she was, I think we talked about this last week, set to make like 150 million off opening weekend. And did you know Beyonce went to the premiere?
Yeah, I did see that. It was very sweet. It was very nice.
I think it's because Beyonce released that she was going to do one afterwards. So she needed to go to show that she wasn't copying Taylor Swift.
Yeah. There's always a strategy. Someone said like these two are single-handedly like recession-proofing the US economy. It's true.
Yeah.
The amount that those two have single-handedly generated in the last year is astounding.
I know, it's absolutely crazy. And she's still performing. Like next year she comes to London in like August. That's so many concerts. How is your little voice okay?
She must have so many things she behind the scenes does to look after herself.
I mean, she doesn't look like it. She just goes to like the, what was it? The MTV VMAs midway through her tour and is getting like lit and screaming and dancing. And now she's just like at Travis, whatever his name is, games, screaming in the stands. But
I know.
Yeah, you would think so.
There must like be get insurance. Some bed rest. Yeah, exactly. Because if she suddenly gets like a bad head cold, that's millions of dollars on the line. She can't show
also,
up.
Also, can you believe having those plans every single night? Like, I can't even have plans with my friends for dinner. Imagine if you had plans for 70,000 people in an auditorium, the pressure it would feel to cancel.
Yeah, it's literally crazy. Props to Taylor. I had a very different cinematic experience to you, I think, on the same night. Equally as long, although it felt its running time, which was the new Martin Scorsese movie, Killers of the Flower Moon with Leo. It just confirmed... I don't really rate Leo. I know we talk about him being like Jada and like gross with his bachelor behavior. I know he's like a good actor, but I just don't. I feel like he does the same thing a lot. Like he rests on a few tropes, and everyone thinks it's like really serious acting stuff. He's good, but I was just reminded that I don't like love watching him on screen.
Yeah, I agree. But I also think he's lost some of his charm as he's gotten older. Like now that he's not as hot, you're just kind of like...
You're just a man. It just
lands less. Whereas Brad Pitt's still got the hot thing. So you're just like, fine. You can be on screen doing your bad acting.
Fine. So this is like talking about... We were talking before. I won't go too far into it in case we all just get depressed again. But it's... set in America in the 20s in Osage, which is like a county in Oklahoma, I think. And the Osage are a Native American tribe. And they basically kind of were one of the few like Native American groups to monetize off the oil boom. So by the 1920s, they were the richest people in the world per capita, like per square thing. And they were like dripping with diamonds and had these huge houses and like still dressed in like traditional clothes, but would mix it with really expensive cars. And really, it's kind of a fascinating little moment of time. It's kind of one of the worst things I've ever seen just for like, you know how sometimes you need like individual stories to grasp just how fucked up the like overall thing of like colonization and what America like what fucking you know white Americans did in America, just seeing this one individual story through which to understand that whole story, it makes you just want to throw shit against walls and like cry and scream. But basically they were just killing people in the community for years and playing them off as suicides or illnesses or accidents. And it took like people in the community basically begging the FBI to come and check it out for anything to change.
Yeah, and some like cool journalist went there, right, and investigated it, and he wrote the book Killers of the Flower Moon, and he like uncovered that all of these deaths had happened.
Yeah, right. I didn't know that about the writer.
I only know that because in the line for Kim Gordon's wardrobe sale, a girl was reading Killers of the Flower Moon, the book, and she told me all about it. And it was like this journalist that went and uncovered all of the crimes that they'd been hiding, like how many hundreds of people they killed.
Oh my God.
Or was it thousands? I'm not sure.
I think it's hundreds. It was quite a small community, yeah. But it was like proportionally just fucked.
Yeah. Like so many, yeah.
And just how Martin Scorsese did it, he put like just such an incredible amount of care and time into the way he made the movie. He worked like so closely with like members of the Osage tribe. He used all of the language is used throughout the whole thing, and a lot of the time it's used without even subtitles, so you don't actually know what they're saying. The way he shot it is just so beautiful. That's kind of the best thing about the whole thing, is just seeing the way that like the nuances of their culture, I just think is so beautifully done. And like Lily Gladstone, who's the actress in it, is just fucking amazing. She just steals the show times a million. She's just incredible. And I read her that fucking Jade British Vogue cover they did with her and Leo, where it's giving,
oh my God, yes,
the Meghan Harry time cover. Just why is he
there? They're sitting for like posing for school photos.
The dark shadow, and he's like over her shoulder. So bad. Just give her her own cover. It's so weird that he's in it at all. But I was reading that profile, and she had basically been trying to act for like, I think she's in her late 30s now, had been trying to act for nearly 20 years, got a few small parts on a few things, and was, I think she's originally Canadian, was back in Canada during COVID and was like, I'm just going to become a full-time social worker. Like, I've just had enough of this shit. And all the stuff was in place for her to just start her studies or whatever. And she got a call from Martin Scorsese, and she did the audition over Zoom. And he said the second she like lit up on Zoom, he knew she was the one. But it's like a very cool story as well. And she's going to be massive. So it's worth watching for her. It is quite long.
Yeah. Yeah. She's like, there's that like Pocahontas white man love story, isn't it? With her and Leo.
No, you fucking wish. It's like the most horrible. Like he just plays this fucking.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's kind of, they've done a good job of setting it up so you think it's one thing and it's another thing.
Yeah. I do really want to see it.
Yeah. It's heavy and I have no problem with something being long, but I feel like it could have had a little trim here and there. Jesse Plemons like is in it. Priya Zempic, Jesse Plemons is in it.
Oh my God.
Looking like his full sick self. He looks beautiful.
This is Kirsten Dunst's husband, who's miraculously dropped down to like a US size zero. Sample size, babe.
Sample size. To fit into a Prada men's suit.
Also, have you seen Saoirse Ronan and Paul Mescal's movie is coming out? I think there's like a bunch of good movies that are about to come out.
That's very exciting. It's two sexy Irish people.
I know, two sexy Irish people. What's it called? Faux.
Is it a bit of a horny romp? Am I remembering?
I think it's like a sci-fi. So I think they live in the countryside and they're married and in love, and then an uninvited stranger shows up at their door. It's got 5.8 out of 10 on IMDb. Who the fuck has done this?
That is not very good.
Oh my God. Very intense performances and a moody, bleak, but beautiful atmosphere throughout. Can't we need more Taylor Swift up in here?
I was just going to say the London Film Festival was on, and I said yes to a bunch of things and then somehow managed to miss all of them. But of those, what I've been told, big movies to watch out for: Priscilla, obvi, I don't know how good it actually is, but we all just want to see.
Yeah.
May, December is, what's his name? Todd Haynes. And it's Julianne Moore playing a, like, school teacher who's been caught having sex with her student. And the student's played by one of the hot guys from Riverdale. Oh, yeah, Natalie Portman's in it as well. But apparently it's, like, very kind of funny.
The hot guy from Riverdale, what's his name? Charles Melton or something?
Yes. Apparently he's literally amazing in it.
Wow. Yeah, I can't wait to see that. Yeah, and then doesn't Natalie Portman come to, like, someone comes as a journalist to him. One of those two comes as the journalist to, like, talk about the... Because she was a teacher and she obviously got, like, fired because this huge big scandal happened, and then they stayed together. And then this journalist comes years later to talk to them about it all. But then it, like, reframes what happened in Charles Melton's mind, which is, I feel like, would be so crazy.
Yes. And it's based on a true story, I think. There was a really famous story like that. And she had, they stayed together and, yeah, had, like, fucking four kids or something. And then he realized at some point and left. It's that so dynamic wild. Of it, the teacher being the female is really interesting. Very, like, untapped in our culture. We don't know what to do with predatory women.
I know. Naughty girls.
Naughty girls.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I watched the first Todd Haynes movie that Julianne Moore was ever in, because she's been in, like, a bunch of them, and it's called Safe, and it's about this woman, this, like, housewife, who basically starts getting sick, and she thinks she's, like, allergic to the air and the chemicals around her, and gets into, like, this cult, and it's Julianne Moore, and she's so incredible in it. But it was really funny, because I feel like that's how I sound at the moment, because I feel like the air in LA... compared to London / anywhere is so bad, and all I keep talking about is the air quality and my lack of sleep and how I can't run in LA versus running in London, and I'm just like air, and I was like, I literally sound like Julianne Moore.
Yeah,
she stops eating all this stuff, like goes on like an only fruit diet, and then like all the pesticides.
Yours is fair, because the air in LA is fucked, and the fact that it feels bad compared to London's the good version is truly concerning.
No, do you know what's crazy? I did my own survey, my own study by accident, because when I run here, when I run around the streets, I have to run quite slow for like my normal pace, because you know what you obviously know what you're running, how fast you run a kilometer, you know that because like you have a watch or whatever. And I was running here and I was like, wow, my pace has slowed down so much, like by like 30 seconds per kilometer, which is like quite a big difference. And I was like, maybe I'm just really unfit now, like I don't really get it, like I feel like I've still been working out, but maybe I'm just, I don't know, unfit. And I would run 5k and be like puffed, and then I got back to London and said to Amar, I was like, oh, I'm not going to be able to run like as fast as we usually can, because I just can't run fast anymore, I don't know what's happened. And then in London I was completely fine, like could just run my normal pace, and it's because the air is so bad here that like sucking it into your lungs while you run is so hard that you can't run. I can't run my normal pace that I know how to run. It's so weird.
That is really terrifying.
I know. Running around Hyde Park versus here.
Yeah, there's some fucking Michael Moore thing I watched a few years ago where he had like footage of the smog over LA, like the air pollution smog. And I was like, Jesus Christ. Not good. Why LA specifically? It's not like there's a bunch of factories there. Do I sound stupid? What?
No, I mean, I also don't get it because LA is right by the beach.
Yeah.
So it's like if I drive to Venice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wide open. It's not on top of each other like in New York. But if I drive to Venice, I can run better. But I think it's just the fact that there's literally no public transport at all. So it's every single person to get anywhere is taking a car, which is so wild.
And you sit in traffic, right? So it's just like that fume of just cars fucking sitting and running without moving for like hours at a time.
Mm. Yesterday I walked 1,500 steps, and that's just how much you walk in LA unless you're like taking yourself out for a huge walk in like gross concrete jungle. But yeah, were there any other movies that sounded good?
And then Poor Things, which is the guy who directed The Favourite and The Lobster and Killing of a Sacred Deer, and it's the one with Emma Stone, and she's in that amazing costume, and it's apparently really horny, and Mark Ruffalo's in it, which you can't have it all. But it's meant to be amazing.
Okay, fab. And then Saltburn is coming out. I saw Saltburn has come out. It's that new one with Jacob Elordi, and it's Emerald Fennell's second film.
Yes, that's right, with that Barry Keogh guy.
Yes, Barry Keogh and Rosamund Pike. And I saw that I was seeing that people in Australia were writing shit about like seeing it, and it doesn't come out here till November 17. I was like, what the hell?
Everything's backwards. Australia's getting it early. Oh my God, that's such a slate of things to be excited about.
I know. So many good movies. Speaking of good shows.
I was going to say good movies, great documentary. The Agatha Christie documentary has just come out in the UK. I don't think it's come out in Australia yet, but get on a VPN and get your hands on it because it's a pointless, like it does. Mm-hmm. All it does is just retread a story we all know well. It gives us a very small amount of insight because Colleen Rooney and Wayne are in it, but just recapping that delicious tale was very, very enjoyable.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone knows what we're talking about, but Colleen Rooney, is the wag, the wife of Wayne Rooney, who's like a massive famous footballer in the UK. And they've been together forever since they were teenagers, kind of similar to Posh and Becks. And he played on the same team as well. So at one point they were wags together, Posh and Colleen. But Posh is like, I'm not a wag, on. I'm a Spice Girl.
Their vibes are so, like, I feel like their vibes would just not match.
Yeah. And then she found out that someone was leaking her private Instagram stories. I couldn't get over how much. I understand that this whole thing happened on Instagram, but I can't get over how much we were in her private Instagram during this documentary. So she had this private Instagram, was uploading photos of her and the kids and Wayne, and like just saying really kind of stupid, pointless things that she wouldn't post on her main Insta. And then stuff was getting leaked to The Sun. And she realized it was Rebecca Vardy's account, .. Rebecca Vardy's account, who is another wag. And Rebecca Vardy's husband plays in the same team as Colleen Rooney's husband. So it was like this crazy drama when she released it on Twitter. And then Colleen sued. Rebecca sued Colleen for defamation, even though she had done it. And then it all went through the courts, and then Colleen won because that was the case where we were talking about how Rebecca Vardy's manager said she couldn't bring the texts up on her phone because she lost her phone at sea.
Her phone like had a week fallen prior into the Irish Sea, and then like the laptop with all the other messages had been like they said it had broken, and then the I can't remember, they threw it in the bin or something and it just couldn't be found. So much evidence like got lost and went missing. It was so funny.
How did we get these texts then? We still got the texts.
We still got the texts. So Colleen, this, let's do some like in Rebecca Vardy's defense-ing for a minute, which is that Colleen, Wayne Rooney is like one of the most famous football players in English history. He's very, very, very wealthy. Like you saw some insight.
Their house is fucking crazy.
They're like stupidly rich. I love that they still live just outside of Liverpool as well. Like they're stupidly rich. Jamie Vardy is just not on that level, and therefore Rebecca Vardy is just not on that level. So when Rebecca Vardy sued Colleen, everyone kind of thought Rebecca would win because basically to prove defamation, you have to prove that your character and reputation has been damaged by something someone said, which obviously with Rebecca Vardy it had. And she... Colleen basically had to prove that it was 100% Rebecca. So even if she had screenshots that the only person who'd seen the stories was Rebecca Vardy's Instagram account, that still wasn't proof that Rebecca Vardy leaked stuff to The Sun. Like there's 10 steps in between that that you had to prove that's really, really hard to prove. So people kind of thought it was like Rebecca's case to lose. But Colleen hired David Sherborne, who's like the most famous English celebrity lawyer there is. He did Prince Harry and Meghan's trial against The Telegraph. He did Johnny Depp against The Sun. He was on The Sun's, whatever it was. All these big cases he's been involved in, and he always wins. And basically him and his team, I think what happened, I can't remember in the documentary, but I think what happened was they asked for some texts to be sent over, and Rebecca Vardy's team were obviously just so subpar in terms of what she could afford to pay, and I think they accidentally sent over the whole transcript. I think.
Oh my god!
So there's these texts. It's just so funny.
It's really, really funny. We've got all the texts in our document,
and you're like, you've taken this woman to court, and now. Like your reputation was already bad, and now all these text messages are coming out in the public domain because I know.
Do you know what else is like obvious in it? Is like Rebecca Vardy's obviously a bit jealous of Colleen, but what I love about Colleen is she does just seem like a really, really normal, low key British girly. Like she just wants to hang out with her schoolmates and get lit on rosé. And just be super normal with her family. Like she's just not even posh or so up her own ass as Rebecca texts her manager, like at all. All of the shit we were seeing on her private Instagram was the most wholesome content in the world. Doesn't seem to really care about designer stuff, just like has all her money, wants to hang out at home with her kids and her parents.
I think that's why people have gravitated to this so much, because it's just this. And it is kind of gross. It's like that catfight thing that people love that's a bit misogynistic. But it is that classic tale of someone who's like jealous of someone else and simultaneously wants to be their friend but also hates them and is like projecting all of this shit onto, you know, Colleen's just like, I don't really care about her. She's not mean to her. She's not thing. She just doesn't want to be her mate. And it's obviously tortured Rebecca Vardy.
Yeah.
And like driven her to... leaking shit and enjoying leaking it, and then also just being horrible about her to her agent, and the whole time Colleen Rooney's just completely unfussed. Like,
yeah,
she's just unfussed, unfazed. She doesn't care. She doesn't know who she is. She's like, even when she's talking about it, she just said all the people on that account were like friends of mine. The only person I didn't really know was Rebecca, and I thought she was like a bit jarred, so I thought it was probably her. Like, she's just so chill. She's so chill. She's like the chillest woman in the world. I love her.
I know. The other funny parts about it were, I had something that popped into my brain that it went, but like the other funny part is Wayne Rooney, obviously. So they like talk about their marriage a bit, because this has to do with when, also Rebecca was like leaking the stories to The Sun so that she would get good coverage in The Sun. So it wasn't even like necessarily about getting paid for the leaks. She was more just getting like, it was so obvious because she'd get this glowing profile, like exclusive with The Sun. And then it would just be like, and Colleen Rooney's marriage is over. We have screenshots. And then they had to talk about Wayne Rooney and Colleen Rooney's marriage a bit, because when the leaks started, it was when Wayne, and I want to look more into this, like maybe he just has a history of publicly cheating. She kind of
her a bunch, like publicly. Right. There's been heaps of scandals about it, being caught with girls, and he's admitted he has cheated on her like quite a few times. he's naughty and slow.
He's naughty and he has 3 brain cells, but you know that thing of literally David Beckham was doing the same thing the whole way through his documentary. It was just like, I love Victoria, I want to be with her forever and I love her so much. And Wayne was doing the same thing. And then he had to talk about when he was out at a pub one night and then got pulled over drink driving another girl's Volkswagen Beetle and she was in the passenger seat, this redhead. And then because he got pulled over by the police, like obviously driving back to this girl's house, he went to the cells for the night and it was like all over the news. And then he was just like saying in the documentary, and then this girl goes and talks on the TV because she's getting publicly vilified and shamed, and she was just like, nothing happened, like. And then he's like
crazy. It's its own weird little world, the English media.
It's so nuts. Yeah, and then he was like, I don't even remember talking to her.
He's or silly. Meeting her. Later on, he was like, I thought after this case that I should consider going and becoming a lawyer. I was like, Wayne, please.
Oh my God, I know. That was really, really funny. Colleen was like, yeah, Wayne got really into this court case and like talking to the lawyers and, you know, finding out information from my Instagram stories. Now he wants to be a lawyer.
I actually wonder, like with David Beckham and now watching Wayne Rooney back to back, they're obviously not dumb. Like, I know using the word dumb is not very nice, but like that, they can't be as slow as they seem, because they're very, on top of being very successful football players, they're like very, they've created smart businesses, especially David Beckham. There's something about like the way they communicate, I think, that makes them seem slower than they are. They're very like, I feel this way. I felt sad. Like you said, I love Victoria. I was sorry. I was angry. I was relaxed. Like, it's that vibe. Maybe they're trained to talk that way or something.
I feel like you're giving them too much credit. I feel like they have a good team around them. I feel like they're so rich that they just hired good people and they just take care of the money.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right. Okay, let's go into the text messages quickly.
So these are the texts Rebecca Vardy sent to her agent,
Caroline Watts, whose name I will always now know because they just... She has one of those full names.
Yes.
Caroline Watts.
She said, I don't know, do we say the C word on here? But she said, what a cunt, X.
That's the best one.
And then she's a nasty bitch, X. She's trash, X. And then this one, would love to leak those stories, X. And also, like, it's so obvious because of Colleen Rooney. Felt like it was Rebecca Vardy. So just, and then instead of doing anything or talking to her about it or anything, she just removed her as a follower. This is like back when Instagram was a bit less, like, I don't know, she kind of just thought she wouldn't realize. So she just removed her as a follower. And then Rebecca texts her and was like, is everything okay, hun? Just realized that you don't follow me on Instagram and I don't follow you. And then Colleen was like, oh, whoops, my bad. Like, I don't know how that happened. The kids always have my phone. And then followed her back, let her back into the private, and then the story started getting leaked again.
This is like the biggest, the one criticism you could have leveled at Colleen during the original Wagatha Christie was from the way she framed it. It seemed like a few of these stories were coming out, like were coming out in the press out of many things she was sharing. Like, that was the vibe. So I did remember feeling a little bit like, this is juicy, this is salacious, this is great, I love it. But you could have just messaged her and been like, dude, I've seen you're doing this. We're not friends anymore. Like, it's such a big, showy thing to do, which you know is going to like destroy this person's life. But just from her perspective, how brazen and like ongoing and insane it was from Rebecca Vardy's end is nuts. Like, she did it. She got kicked off the Instagram account instead of realizing then and trying to not do it. Every single thing she posted after that went to the sun. Like, basically every single thing. She just had no... Wasn't she worried at all about being caught? Like, we need it from her side.
I know. And there was only 300 people in Colleen Rooney's private Instagram, and she said she went through her list like so many times and was just like, it can't be anyone except this random wag that asked to follow me after meeting her once.
And she goes, it was sneaky. What did you say? Did you say it was cheeky, it was sneaky, or it was sneaky?
She said it was sneaky, it was sneaky, it was cheeky. She was just like, it was sneaky. It was cheeky. I loved seeing their love story and how they'd been together since they were 16. It was really cute.
It was very sweet, yeah. It's so hard to imagine. I think because I'm still not a sports person, it's still quite hard for me to understand. I get David Beckham and Victoria Beckham. I'm like, David Beckham was really hot. Victoria Beckham's the Spice Girl. With this case, Wayne Rooney's just like a bloke. And I get the, I just, this is where I don't understand sports and sport culture, because I'm like, I understand he became a good footballer and he was only 17 years old. But for then the whole press to descend on the high school that his 16-year-old girlfriend goes to and take photos of her just walking around the suburbs, I'm like, why? What was the appetite for that? It's so bizarre, but it just was. It's kind of creepy. It is kind of creepy.
It's so creepy. They're like, oh, this hot new young footballer, does he have a girlfriend? And then all the paparazzi were trying to like fight to get the first photos of her, and she's just walking home from school.
Yeah, in a school, like, shirt. It's so, I guess that's the good thing about Instagram now, is it has allowed, nowadays if a footballer came out and people would be like, who's his girlfriend? You'd just look on Instagram, find the tag, and you'd get the stuff from there. There just, no one would bother going to hunt someone down because a bazillion pictures of the girl already exist.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, you know, like it's killed off that curiosity. I guess like now when I think about it, I'm like, if people would literally be like, what does she look like in a weird way? But yeah, they are very cute. I think what's great about this documentary is that it is all a bit silly and it's not very high stakes. And Colleen does such a good job of, like, even her being like, it was sneaky, it was cheeky. Like, that's just it. It was sneaky and it was cheeky. There was no more to it. Like, she doesn't sit and like cry. Like, she does talk a little bit about how bad the legal case was and how stressful it was. But like, she's not overly dramatic. She's not buying into some super hardcore victim narrative. She's just being like, yeah, this happened. It was annoying. I called it out and now it's fine.
Are those men still on the same football team?
No, they're both fully retired, I think.
Oh, nice.
But the amount of money, for Rebecca Vardy, I just can't stop thinking about, like, you do this, you become friends with Colleen, you start leaking stuff to the press, you do it just way too much, way too often, so she notices. She removes you from Instagram, and instead of being like, okay, once I'm back in, I'll just behave myself, you just keep doing it immediately, so obviously. You get called out on a massive level. Instead of just being like, yep, shouldn't have done that. This is embarrassing. You sue. You try to destroy
the evidence. I wonder if her husband knew, or if she had to be like, okay, here's the thing. Here's the thing that's been going on. He definitely wouldn't have known,
He wouldn't have known. Nah. And she was doing it with his teammates as well. She was leaking stuff to the Sun about he'd be like come home and complain that someone missed practice, and she would like leak it to the Sun. She's a naughty girl.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, she's a naughty girl. And she had sex with Peter Andre and said he had a tiny penis to the Sun as well. She's naughty. Yeah.
They used that in the court case, talking about how she, like, doesn't care about keeping things private and personal. Yeah, that's so icky. I really don't like that vibe of a person.
No, it's horrible. And then, so for her trajectory, it's like that goes through a court case where she's completely outed as being 100 times worse than we all thought she was. And then has to pay not only her lawyer's fees, but Colleen Rooney's lawyer's fees, which is the most expensive lawyer in Britain. It's £3 million. So she's bankrupted herself and her family. Like, just this string of events is just...
It's so crazy.
It's all so preventable.
Is she still... I can't believe she's still with Jamie Vardy.
He was.
This shows the level of how dumb those men are.
Literally. He's just like, you're innocent. I believe you.
Wow.
I think she went on I'm a Celebrity. What? Okay, wait. Let's be PR people. What do you do if you're Rebecca Vardy? Obviously, you don't take it to court. You just go to ground. You say, yep, leaked a couple stories to the Sun. Sorry. And then you make a joke about it a few years later to rehabilitate your career. I think you can come back from being called a leaker and it can all be a bit fun and gamesy. But now the texts have come out, I think it's harder for her to come back.
I think, I don't know, because part of me wants to say like that you would be a bit more honest and just say, you know, here's the truth of it. I felt really insecure. I saw this woman doing all these amazing things and I wanted the public to like me as much as they liked her. So I wanted to use these stories as a way to get nice coverage about myself in the press. And it's really stressful being a wag.
Yeah. Yeah. But a bit just, later, like at the time, just be like, yep, hands up. And then later do like a how to fail with Elizabeth Day.
Yes.
About it. And then, yeah, she could have come back. We should have been her PR people. I would have said
she could have been on the cover of like Stylist or something.
Yeah. Written a book about jealousy. That is the angle. Oh my God. I reformed Instagram addict, addicted to comparing myself to other people, never felt like enough, blah, 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 blah. Oh my God.
Tearing other women down.
Yeah, tearing other women down. And then her and Colleen could have had like a sit down podcast that got a bazillion views.
Yeah, she really fucked up.
She fucked up every step of the way. Appalling.
I can't believe that they're still together.
I know, she's still posting on Instagram. She's still got a good 403K.
She's got heaps. Like, Colleen only has 1.1 million or something. It's not that much difference.
She's coming for her.
She's got one of those Jada accounts that has like blogs, travel, RV style, charity, beauty pics, family life on her Instagram highlights with little...
Who designed those?
With little pictures for each one. Oh, Jada. I watched it at Tat's house and she had never heard of it and had no idea what was going on. And I was like, just press play. And then she fell asleep.
I was going to say, people don't know. I saw someone last week who had never heard of it. I was like, how's it possible?
I know. It's impossible in the UK, surely.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, if you were in the UK at the time.
I remember where I was when it happened.
So do I.
What street I was on.
I was at work at my desk. So, yeah. Thank you to Colleen for participating in this documentary. I mean, now she's probably made money off of it, so it's all swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, she comes out just looking very chill and cool.
Yeah, you don't get the sense she's like basking in it or like it's all just, she played it all perfectly and she did it by being herself.
Yeah, that's the lesson. Same with Posh and Bex.
Yeah, exactly. Really interesting that those two have come out back to back.
I know. Britney's memoir. Audible sent me a pre-order Britney's memoir on Audible. I'm going to use one of my credits for the Michelle Williams reading of it, and then we need to watch Crossroads, and that's that.
Yeah, I would quite like to watch Crossroads. Maybe we can do a AWD watches Crossroads.
Yeah.
Love.
All right, girls.
Okay, bye, girlies.
Love you lots.
Love
you. Bye.
Ya. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.